Hey everybody, it's George from Gaming My Whole Life. Today we're going to be doing a little bit of a solo episode for episode 20. Now, unfortunately, the other podcasters weren't able to join us today, but thankfully there's actually a lot to talk about. Thanks to the upcoming and excitement of E3, a lot of leaks and a lot of potential spoilers have arisen. Now, you know very well that this isn't a news podcast. We just like to share our opinion, have some deep discussions, and we also like to cover topics. So a topic which I wanted to cover today, before we discuss Rage 2, that game looks amazing, but we'll save that for later. Now, what I wanted to talk about is what E3 does to all of us gamers, and that is generating hype. Now, the question here is, and the one I want to pose to you gentlemen and ladies listening, is what's better? Like, you know, how does hype hold up to the real thing? Because, you know, hype is what we do as gamers. The moment we get our hands on a game and we're playing it, and we're all guilty of this, is we're meant to be enjoying the game in the moment. We're meant to not be thinking about any follow-up games, any sequels. We're meant to enjoy what's in our hands. And yet the very first thing that happens is, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And now I'm already plotting what will be added to the next one. I've even done that with Zelda, you know, Breath of the Wild. It's the best Zelda game I've ever played, hands down. And yet as much as I loved it and still love it, the whole time I couldn't help but like, oh, I wonder how the other one's going to look. Is it going to look even better? What sort of features are they going to add? Would they make dungeons return? And so forth. And I think it can be a little bit of a detriment, because sometimes you can hype a game for so long, the idea of something is so big, that when you finally get your hands on it, it's not even possible for the game to potentially live up to the hype. And some people, and myself included, can almost, as weird as it sounds, can almost get just as much of enjoyment out of waiting for a game and looking up all the screenshots and leaks and piecing everything together like it's a big puzzle. I enjoy the build-up to a game release just as much as the game itself. And I've spoken to a lot of gamers who feel the same way. So yeah, it's just an interesting concept. And you know, a lot of people have been actually getting a bit upset that there have been E3 leaks and they're doing their best not to look. And that's fine. Like, obviously, you know, I understand the concept of we don't want to do too many spoilers. You want to save it for the day. But one opinion which I've seen circulate around the internet seems to be a little bit popular is, does it ruin your E3 if you potentially know a lot of what's already going to be on offer? I do feel that, yes, obviously the surprise factor will be gone, because, you know, if someone's like, yep, this game's coming out, and you're like, yeah, I knew that was leaked a little while ago. Well, firstly, it was potentially leaked. Like, none of these have been confirmed, so you don't know. But second, for me anyway, because I'm a half glass full sort of man, is that I want to look at the good things. And if I know ahead of time that a game I'm really interested in is coming out and it's going to be showcased at E3, then instead of being disappointed because, like, oh, the game I knew was going to be announced was announced, I'll be anticipating it. I'll be excited. I'll be like, good, that game I always wanted a sequel to is coming out, and I can look forward to a trailer. So yeah, I know, just some damage control here, I guess. You know, not everything is over if something was revealed before E3. Just enter E3 knowing that there's probably going to be a good amount of games that you're interested in. And, you know, hold your head high. Now, as I mentioned at the start, Rage 2 has been announced. Now, I want to quickly bring this up to date for anyone who is possibly unfamiliar with the first Rage, because there's only been one Rage game, and obviously that's why we're up to Rage 2. So Rage came out all the way in 2011 and was a game led by the legendary game designer John Carmack. If his name sounds familiar, probably should. He's the guy who built Doom, who did the original Doom engine and, you know, pioneered the way of those first-person games. And, you know, Doom 3, which back in the day, if you're old enough, when that came out, that was like, whoa, wow, like, that was amazing. That was John Carmack's work. And the ID engine, which was used for the first Rage, at that time in 2011, it introduced unprecedented graphics. Like, it was amazing. The amount of details, he had something implemented called Ultra Texture or something, which was basically one huge texture which covered the whole gaming world, and it allowed you to add unique details. So for example, you won't see the same dirt texture just repeated and repeated and repeated. Every single inch of that game world had a unique look and a unique feel. And at that time, I don't know if other engines have done it since then, at that time that was unheard of. The only backlash to that engine, and was quite annoying actually, is it would try to consume memory as much as possible and would do the usual trick which all first-person shooters do, and that is it will only render what you're looking at. That's how you save resources. So if you're walking forward and there's a building behind you and there's a building in front of you and there's grass behind you, it doesn't make sense that the computer wastes resources rendering the grass behind you when you're not even looking at it. Like, it should only look at the building. So if you turn around and look at the grass, it will load up in real time. And while you're looking at the grass, the building is gone. You turn around, look at the building, it loads up again. The problem is it didn't do this on the fly as it should. And if you turned around quickly, which, let's be honest, in a first-person shooter, that's what you're doing all the time, you would literally get a glimpse of that said building looking all muddy and horribly textured. And then all of a sudden, bang, the detail would pop in. And it was very off-putting because, you know, you've been immersed in this really detailed world, and if you've been looking in a direction for at least 1 second, yes, all the details popped in and then it was fine. But, you know, to every time you turned a corner sharply, it would take a moment for the texture to pop in. It really pulled you out of the experience. The overall game was received quite well. It felt more like an old school shooter, you know. So first person shooter, post-apocalyptic world, you know, think of Mad Max. That's probably the best example, you know. Think of rival violent gangs about the place, and you're just a badass trying to get about and help the locals. That was basically Rage 1. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was amazing, but I always thought it had great potential. And that's what leads us to Rage 2. Now, that's coming out this year. So it's been 7 years. That is a long time. Now, apparently they started working on Rage 2 as soon as Rage, the first one, was done. But then a year later, they started focusing development on Doom. And, you know, anyone who's played Doom 2016, so obviously they worked on that for like, 4-5 years after, that game turned out amazing. It just, you know, some of the best graphics you can get, very reliable engines, and even older systems can run it buttery smooth, very scalable, so it can go to any platform. And they even got that game running on the Switch. That is an amazing achievement. And now the thing is, I did mention at the start that John Carmack led the way for Rage, the first one, and he's left ID. Like, he was the founder of ID, and he left it to move on to other ambitions that he had, which last I checked, he was really invested in the virtual reality realm. He feels there's a lot of potential there and he wants to push it further. And to be honest, considering this man gave me some of the best childhood memories I've ever had, I'm not going to question him. He's obviously smart, and, you know, It's up to him what he does going forward. So anyway, so that left the team to, you know, carry on the legend that was the first game. And who Bethesda chose, so the publisher, the new owners, they chose Avalanche Studios to head this game. And Avalanche Studios, they're the amazing team who did the Just Cause games. You know, so Just Cause 3, the most recent one, just to tickle your memory in case you're wondering, Just Cause, where have I heard that? That's the game that played like Grand Theft Auto. You're on a big, beautiful island, whereas the main selling feature was the insanity of the game, and that is you had this grappling hook. So you could jump off a mountain and use this grappling hook and, you know, to fling yourself everywhere. And what was exciting about this is the game character was a wizard, because he had unlimited backpacks, parachutes, that's the word, is in his backpack. Like, you could jump off any surface, rip out this parachute, and be gliding, and you would combine the parachute with the hook that you would shoot out. So think of like Batman. So, you know, you're swinging through trees and mountains and you know, slingshotting around buildings by forever gliding everywhere because he just never ran out of parachutes. And you could get really creative with what you can do with the hook. So I'll give you one example, which I remember I did this in real time. It wasn't planned and I was so proud of myself. Is I was driving down a highway in the game, of course, and it was one of those sporty open-ended cars where it doesn't have a roof. And I was being chased by some thugs who, for whatever reason, wanted to kill me, probably because I killed them first. And it was one of those highways which you had to separate in the middle, so you had like three lanes going one way, three lanes going the other, and there were trees in between. So since I was being chased and I wanted to, you know, outmaneuver the thugs that were chasing me in their car, because, you know, they all had their hands and heads out the window and they were shooting me, so I was about to die, I used the parachute to, as I'm still in motion in the car, shoot the tree, which slingshotted me out of the vehicle, did a full 360, had me going down the other direction of the highway, and then I landed on top of another sporting car, kicked out the driver, and kept driving. So that was the sort of creativity which this series had. And you could be evil as well, because you could attach your that wire hook thing to one object and then do it to another and make it spring for no reason. So for example, you could how can I put this? Okay, so you can set like a trap wire. So say you'd shoot a bit of the ground. Okay, I got it. So you shoot one tree, right? Shoot the wire in one end, look at another tree, shoot the other wire. So then you have this long metal wire just hanging there. And any cars that tried to drive through that would get slingshotted as if they just tried to, you know, like a tennis ball hitting a tennis net. You just spring right back like it was a slingshot. And if anyone went with a motorbike, that they would just get necked. It was hilarious. Or you could like connect one car to another for absolutely no reason. And you could, the best thing which I liked, which was just so evil of me, but I still did it because it was just funny because I could do it, is I would shoot one end of a slingshot into an actual person, like their leg or something, and then wait for a car to drive by and then shoot the car with the slingshot. So then the hook is connected to the guy's leg and to the car, and the car would just keep driving, of course, with this poor human being dragged behind him screaming for his life. And yeah, hopefully that paints a little bit of a picture of the creativity and talent of the team that is Avalanche Studios. And it's fascinating that Bethesda chose this team to do Rage 2, because Rage was a fair bit of a serious sort of game. Like, you know, it had very detailed locations, and even though it had a cel-shaded cartoony look, it was a very realistic version with some amazing lighting. And the one complaint I had about Rage 1 was, firstly, I felt personally it didn't have that much of a story, and just two, I understood the setting was bland, but I felt the color palette was just a little bit too boring. Like, even if something looks great, if mostly all you see is brown, it gets a bit boring. And after seeing the Rage 2 trailer, I knew straight away that those concerns were no longer a thing. Like, it's just bursting with color and personality and craziness. And, you know, I hope they don't lose themselves along the way. I don't want them to go completely in the other direction, because there'll be original fans of Rage 1 who would want the sequel to obviously, you know, keep that feeling. But I am glad that they're literally just splashing color. And, you know, I saw one bit where he's shooting the guy with the shotgun or something, and he's going up in the air. So the sheer force of being penetrated by the bullets from the shotgun was shooting this enemy guy in the air, and he was flipping. And you kept shooting him over and over and over again while he was continuously in the air. So it was like some weird Matrix juggling versus Dante from Devil May Cry sort of experience. And I remember by the end of the trailer, I thought, wow, this is really good. And it didn't occur to me who Avalanche Studios was, So, you know, being the boss of my own podcast series, obviously I'm like, okay, it's time for me to do some research. This Avalanche Studios just sounds really familiar. Then as soon as I typed into Google and Just Cause 3 came up, I was like, right, this is the team. This is the team behind it. And I thought, wow, that is a gutsy move. Like, how does someone who has Just Cause 3 on their resume approach Bethesda, or Bethesda Corp approach them, or whatever happened? They're like, right, we will do your next first-person game. Like, I don't think they've actually done a first-person game before. And we don't know much about the game. We don't know if it's running off the ID engine or if it's running off their own engine, the engine they use for the Just Cause games. Visually, it does look fantastic, though. It looks very upbeat. There'll be a focus on multiplayer. Not that there won't be a main single player. Single player will still be the bread and butter, but there will be some sort of implementation of multiplayer, although they haven't specified exactly how much. So, yeah, if you haven't checked out, if you thought Rage 1 was okay and enjoyed it moderately, I would highly recommend checking out Rage 2. I posted a link for the video on the Facebook group Positive Gaming Space. We've been talking about, you know, Rage 2 and a lot of the E3 games. Like, that Facebook group has kept me seriously busy, and I'm loving it because the whole point of that group was wanted to connect with other gamers, and boy, are we connecting. Like, everyone's posting something every single day. We're always having chats. It's just a positive environment. It's what I strive for it to be. And yeah, I'm super glad that we're there. Now, one very unexpected thing which did happen is I saw one... Oh, hang on, that sound shouldn't be coming through. One surprise announcement, which I wasn't expecting, and this was for the Nintendo Switch, was a game called Go Vacation. And it's done by Namco, of all people. Now, when you first start seeing the trailer for this Switch game, it looks like the Miis are back. So remember the Miis from the Wii and the Wii U, where you could create your own little cartoony avatar to play in a bunch of mini games with you. So you had Wii Sports, so you had tennis and bowling and golf and boxing, you know, and it implemented the introduction to motion controls. So we all had a lot of fun. I absolutely loved that back in the day. And yeah, Go Vacation. So I actually read the description. So enjoy a virtual vacation with over 50 co-op and competitive activities, fun for the whole family when Go Vacation arrives on Nintendo Switch July 27th. And I have to tell you, I'm not the type of person who sees mini games and is, yeah, I want to get in on that. But the variety is so strong. There's so many different things going on that it just looks really, really fun. And what's even better is with the Switch, you have the Joy-Cons, you already have motion controls built into it. So I'm having a look at the trailer. I'm letting it play on mute in front of me while I do this, just so I can point out some of the cool sports. So one thing I see is scuba diving. I'm seeing surfing. I'm seeing jet skiing, fishing. And it's done by themes. So the first area was like with the water and all that. Now we've entered the snow area. So it's like four different resort locations. And the snow area has you snowboarding and taking ski lifts. Let's play that a bit further. It's mountain resort. So kayaking. You can do kayaking with the game. You can do horse riding. You can do four-wheel driving. You can play tennis. There's just so many different, full-on racing game, skateboarding game, motorbike game, golfing. Looks like you can play at a theme park. Like, there's just heaps of things going on. So four player action, and it's just one of those unexpected joys that sometimes these events do it. And that's what's exciting about E3. It's the potential. You don't know what will come. And I like the idea that E3 is an opportunity for developers to make you want something you didn't know you wanted. Like, for example, I hadn't thought about Rage in years. Thought the first one was good, felt it could have been better, but it was good enough. And that was it. I wasn't thinking, hey, I needed a follow-up. And then I see the trailer and I'm like, look at those colors and explosions and graphics. And this is done by Avalanche. How is he juggling him in the air? And just, it made me want it. And, you know, when I saw Go Vacation on the Switch, you know, I thought, oh, another, you know, Wii Sports wannabe. I'm like, how boring. And I'm like, oh, that's odd. This game isn't even by Nintendo. And, oh, wow, we're not talking 4, 5, 6 games here. We're talking 50. Like, this actually looks pretty good. And it's like, wow, all this with motion controls, this would actually be fun. So it's appeared out of nowhere. And I'm expecting this to happen all the way right up to E3 and even well after. It's just a fun time. You know, a lot of fun games. Like, you know, recently I tried to get my hands, I bought Assassin's Creed Origins. I've spoken about it quite a few times on the podcast before. I've played it numerous times at friends' houses and I've seen all the reviews and all that. And due to budget restraints and quite frankly, all the extra time I've had to commit to keeping the Facebook page going and being a moderator there and run this podcast series takes up a lot of time. Anyway, long story short, I got around to buying Assassin's Creed Origins and I downloaded it and I haven't been able to launch it and it's been very frustrating. I hit the play button, nothing happens. I've verified the files, I've re-downloaded the game, I've followed a million different tutorials online and I think I've figured out what has stopped the game from launching and I'm not sure how I feel about this. And that is, I don't meet the minimum system requirements. More specifically, apparently my CPU is a little bit too old, which, you know, it's a Phenom 2 quad-core processor. I know Phenom 2 is, you know, it's aged, but I would have figured a quad-core would have been enough. And for comparison's sake, for anyone listening and snickering saying, hee-hee, you know, that's a pretty old CPU, keep in mind I have a GTX 7700, I have 16 gigabytes of RAM. Like, typically every single new game that comes out, I buy it, and I play those games on medium to high settings. So this rig of mine, medium to high settings, every single game I play. The lowest I've ever played a game in recent memory was playing on medium, which is pretty good. And it infuriates me, it frustrates me, and just upsets me, to be frank, that Ubisoft has developed their game where either your CPU is new enough or it won't even launch. Because I can guarantee you, if it let me launch, okay, I won't be able to play the game on high graphics. My system is a little bit old. I get that, but you're telling me that I couldn't run this game on medium to low? You're telling me I couldn't run this on low? I can play the latest Doom game on max settings. I play the latest Tomb Raider game on medium to high settings. That, you know, like this PC is holding up fine. And yeah, Ubisoft has this barrier that's like, yeah, no, your CPU isn't new enough, so I'm not even going to launch. That's a poor design. Why can't I play other games and I can't even launch this? I can't even say, right, I'll launch it. I'll play on the lowest settings if I have to. But no, I'm not even given that option. So, sigh. What can you do? Like, I don't understand. You know, if your system isn't good enough to play a game on high settings, you know, or even medium settings, then you should be able to. Like, meh. Anyway, just a little disappointed with that, but who knows. I've looked online and I've seen a lot of other people actually state that they can't launch the games themselves, and they're with PC rigs that are actually even much more newer than mine, so it might actually not even have anything to do with the CPU. It just might not launch for the same reason that people with much higher end PC gaming builds can't launch it either. And Ubisoft's response hasn't been so good. If you go to the Ubisoft website and go to Assassin's Creed Origins, hotlinked on the very first page, I kid you not, is a bunch of advice of what to do if you can't launch the game. So it's a very common issue. The forums are filled with people with much better PCs than mine that can max out all of today's games, and they can't even launch it. And you know, they've done all the troubleshooting, and yeah, just the irony kills me, because you know, I've given Ubisoft a bit of the cold shoulder, because I don't like the fact that, you know, they're a company who traditionally in the past have launched Assassin's Creed games which weren't ready for launch. You know, they weren't ready, they rushed them, and Assassin's Creed Origins was the first one that they didn't rush. They gave it extra time. It plays beautifully, it looks beautiful. It's really benefited from that extra development time, and I've given them so much credit for it. And then I'm like, right, the first Assassin's Creed I've wanted since the first Assassin's Creed that came out, I actually want this game. I've gone out to buy it, put my money where my mouth is, you know, voted with my wallet as I always preach, and then I can't even launch the game. Like, that's killing me. Anyway, look, I'm gonna wrap things up here. I didn't want to do this too long because unfortunately, due to time restraints and just other unpredictable circumstances, I wasn't able to get anyone else to join me today. And quite frankly, it doesn't really matter how interesting it is what I'm talking about, even if you agree with what I'm saying, it's still just a little bit of a drainer to hear one person just preach on for so long. So I'm going to wrap things up here. Between now and the next podcast, there would have been a lot more news which would be announced. And yeah, I'll make sure I have a few of my fellow besties with me. And until then, hope to see you on the Positive Gaming Space group, and have a great day and happy gaming. Thank you.